This Sunday. Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! But mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and Live Feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
Or on Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, right here in Garden City with your illustrious hosts, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer over there playing cowbell. I hear you.
Yes, I am.
There you go. Very good on the cowbell skills, Chris. I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
Today.
I'm smacking something. I thought it was a cowbell, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's the Mick Jaggers.
The Jaggers, the rapper. That's right. I was trying to figure out what that was.
And for those who don't know, yeah, if you want to go look for that one, Jaggers is spelled with a Z.
Yes, J-A.
No, it's Z-A. No,
E-R-Z.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Very true. That's right. Look at you get into your jock mode.
Oh,
I like
yeah.
that.
Loving it. Loving it.
Getting into your rock and roll jock mode.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here at Motormouth Radio. The longer you listen, the more we're amazed on this fine Sunday afternoon. How have you been this week, right?
Oh, very good. It's been a busy week for both of us.
Yes,
and,
it has.
And there's still more stuff going on. I have a couple announcements to make, but I will say if people want to call, they can do that by dialing, if they have that old rotary phone like we do,
yes.
516-572-7440.
That's right. Do that thing you do with your finger.
Do that voodoo that you do. And
yes.
And you can talk to us.
516-572-7440 is the phone number to get hold of us right here at Motormouth Radio. And I'm telling you, I have something that just boggles my mind this week, right?
Uh-oh.
You know, I've got millennials all around me. I don't know if I've told you this, but my neighborhood used to be filled with, like, old people, and then the old people decide to move out or move up or
yeah,
down.
Yeah, right.
Who knows?
Right.
But they decide to relocate one way or another, and a lot of millennials are now moving in. And I've come to realize, I found that, you know what millennials do that when you see them on a daily basis, you know, outside your window? You know what I find that they do?
What do they do?
They loan out their cars freely and easily.
Really?
They just loan them out.
Okay.
Like, you know, kind of know the cars that show up at the house. You kind of know, you know, the sister-in-law's car, or the brother's car, or the father's car, or the mother's car, whatever have you. And you notice the cars constantly switch and change. Oh, so-and-so needed the SUV. So let's take the sister-in-law's Chrysler and they can have the SUV. Everybody's loaning out cars to everybody else. And I'm like, wait a second. Now I'm going to ask you this question. Do you loan out your car freely to any family member that requests it? Other than me, I know you've loaned your car out to me, and I've brought it back to you cleaned and with full of gas.
That's
so
true.
That's because you want that. You always want that luxury or that option whenever you need it.
Right.
And we needed it that time many years ago. But I mean, honestly, do you just loan out your car to anybody that asks?
Hell no. And I'll say this, especially where family members are concerned. Through history and time, and even now, most of my cars are standard shift models with the third pedal, so they can't drive them. So, but now, you know, like, I'll tell you something now, you know, my older daughter is a little older and more responsible. She's a good driver. And now the SUV that I have is a little bigger than the one that she drives. So if she needed to borrow it, I'd let her take it.
You would?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, so you're going to teach her stick then?
Well, no. It's on a stick. The FJ is an automatic.
Oh, the FJ is automatic. That's right.
What I mean. Yeah, the SUV that I'm driving is an automatic.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I think if you loaned it to her, she'd keep it.
She might. She might. Because that was the thing. You know, she had a Dodge Stratus, which is a very low. And yes. It was a two-door. It was a coupe. It was a really sharp-looking car. It really had that swoopy look. I said, man, they could have made this a NASCAR body. It was that cool.
I think there was an attempt at that at one time.
And the underpinnings were Mitsubishi Eclipse. So it had the Eclipse V6. It had the dual-gate shifter in it. That thing was quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it got totaled. You know, some woman cut in front of her and told it. And she said, you know what, I never felt 100% safe being that low with the roof line that low and the visibility. So she went out and bought an SUV. You know, she bought a Toyota RAV. So and then loves it. You know, now she's a little higher, has better visibility. And I said, okay, listen, that's the thing when you know, I bought you that car. Now you wanted to get something. You went and chose what you wanted. That's the way you do it. And, you know, you paid the loan.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I plan on getting my kid a Volvo wagon.
Absolutely.
Like one of those big 240D Volvo wagons.
Yep.
Big 80s, from the 80s, early 90s, big rubber bumpers on the front of that thing.
Perfect.
That or like a Peugeot.
Hey, you know, speaking of all the
something
cars.
Old, rusty, and French.
Yeah. Our good buddy Dan. Danny showed up at the house yesterday with his Volvo P1800.
Oh,
yeah, he got that car out of Texas. It had been in a barn. I tell you, the trim is in great shape. The paint has a little, it's kind of flat and has some patina, maybe a little bit of rust here, but the trim stayed remarkably in great shape,
really?
Which is good because it must be, I'm looking at it saying this stuff must be hard to find, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a sweet little car, you know, runs like a sewing machine. Just, he started,
really?
It ran so nice and flawless. Yeah.
Is it a four-cylinder or a six?
It's a four. It's an 1.8 liter four. That's why it's the 1800, the P1800.
Got it. Well, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
That makes sense, yeah.
There's a lot of and Fred,
those Europeans.
Well, and our buddy Fred had an 1800 wagon that was a four-speed. So that was cool. It was, the wagons are even harder to find than the coupes.
They were one of those. That was a model of car I remember growing up and seeing them everywhere for some reason. Like, everybody in my neighborhood like had one. They were everywhere, and then all of a sudden they were gone.
Yeah,
literally just gone. Well, one of those cars. I remember those cars being incredibly popular at the time. I think it was probably the mid to late 70s because they stopped producing the P1800 sports car, and for in a bold and unheard of move, they put a wagon body on it, like they called it a shooting brake or a cam back on the back of the car, and it sold again.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were good. Yes. I thought they were fine. Yeah. I thought they looked good.
Sure.
They were cute.
Yeah. Yeah, nice car. So cool stuff. But, there's a lot of neat stuff out there. That's.
But, yeah, I noticed a lot of kids just freely loan out their cars to family members and other friends and things like that. And I'm like, why is that? And I come to realize I know why. Because they treat their cars like appliances.
Yeah.
They treat their car because basically they're – I would say the majority, and boy, I'll take all the cards and letters you have. Prove me wrong. Mm-hmm. But the majority of kids I see do not have any interest in vehicles. So
no.
They're just regular. They're just here. Take it here. Borrow it. It's a blender. It's a fondue maker. That's the way they're treating these vehicles
and
nowadays.
I'll say this as new cars of today are appliances. I mean, it used to be you'd lend a guy a car and say, all right, listen, the tire pressure, go, this one has a little bit of a pull over here. You've got to adjust the brake. It's that wheel. And you know what? I got an emery board in the glove box. If the points start to close, you can fix that. And
right. Feather it a little bit before you start the car.
Exactly.
Hit it with three or four pumps of gas.
I got a siphon in the trunk in case you need gas. You know, it was, you had to be one with your vehicle back then. Today,
mm-hmm.
No, you turn the key. It just goes. Literally put.
Yeah, it's true. You know, at one time, the driver was part of the driving experience. At one time, you know, that's why I always love gauges, because at least when you have gauges on your dashboard instead of idiot lights, you're part of the driving experience. You're part of the car.
Right.
Now that's not the case anymore. Now you're like, captain of a ship and you're just turning a wheel up at the top deck, you have no idea what's going on below your feet. You have nothing. You have no clue. You're so far removed from the driving experience.
They are appliances. And, yeah.
Yeah. Kids don't know that. Nope. Kids don't, they have no clue of that right now.
It's like, where's the 3.5 millimeter jack? Like, where's the USB plug? Oh my God. I can't find anything in this car.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Didn't Joe D post a picture of what one of the younger techs looking at the engine of like a 56 Cadillac, and he has the meter and the plug in, there's the meter in one hand and the plug in the other hand, and it's like looking at this mid to late 50s V8 going, where do I plug this thing in?
Actually, I'll tell you what, a couple of years ago, our good friend Mark came to the studio, came out, met us outside in his Peugeot. And yeah, that's a cool little car.
No, Mark has a Renault.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Renault. Right, that's right.
Yeah, they're all friends.
Sorry, Mark, right. And Joe, we went out, we were looking at it, checking it out, and Joe said he had his toolbox with him, the van. He goes, hold on, you got to take a picture. And he went and grabbed the scanner, and I have a picture of him standing there next to the car going like, ah, what the hell? Same thing, right?
Right. That's hysterical. It's exactly. The truth.
Yeah.
It's the truth. It's so funny. And that's what I always say with this show, when we give advice, I just made myself laugh. Mm-hmm. But when we give advice, it all depends on what the car is, obviously, but it all depends. The advice is still advice when people call us with new cars, because new cars can still be repaired. It's just your tools have changed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really all there is. The tools themselves have changed, but the repairs can happen.
And I tell people this all the time. I get bit by it too. The first and the best tool you need is a database of a repair and diagnostic database. Because just to find the components and then how to check them and what not to do is as important as actually doing the repair itself. So you need all data, or we have an article on our website on motormouthradio.com, which talks about that a little bit. Some of these, mm-hmm. you could actually get a database subscription for your own vehicle for like a month or 2 months. They stage them for, I think a month is maybe $39 with all data. And then of course there's identification.
It's worth it.
If you're going to do some, I see it at the shop, like just to take on the body side of it, I see it, like just how to take components apart. These guys are good. They figure it out, but sometimes they get stumped because stuff is hidden and, that's in the data. And as far as repair goes, oh, my God, the diagnostic procedures are crazy. I'll tell you what else is kind of fun, though. Car shows are fun.
Car shows.
And they're back.
Yes.
And there's one
with a vengeance.
And there's one today. There's one right now that people in this listening audience may want to know about. It's happening till 3 o'clock today at the Massapequa Mall in Massapequa, Long Island.
Nice.
It's our old friend, JD the Mind Freak. Remember him? Chris Angel's brother.
That's right.
This is the second annual Blue Angel Car Show. That's what he calls it. And our friends, Kenny Hammer down there, Andy Perillo from many, many endeavors. Andy was affiliated with the Autoseum, and of course he was George Barris's East Coast rep. He's down there with Butch Patrick. From the Munsters.
Wow.
And I saw in a picture from yesterday's outing, he's got the Munsters coach with him. Now, this is the one that Butch owns. So,
okay.
I think he had that one.
The Munsters coach. I know, because the Autoseum had the Munsters,
the Dragula.
Grandpa's Dragster.
Yeah, the Dragula, right.
The Dragula, right.
Right, right.
So now the Munsters coach is going to be there.
It's Eddie's. I don't think it's not the one from the TV show. It's one Eddie had Eddie, the one Butch had commissioned. We had Butch on the show a number of years ago. We had him
here in this
studio. But
yes, we did.
Yeah, I looked up the show. They say all proceeds from the event benefit Long Island chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So there is a good cause.
Okay.
And even though we're not there, iRadio USA will be broadcasting live from the event. Of course, they didn't ask us to participate, but that's okay. They don't know who we are. And with Butch Patrick, and they're going to be. I asked Kenny. I said, "Hey, if Butch has a couple minutes, if you can, like you've always done in the past, ferret him away a little to a quiet spot, see if he can do a call into the show."
That'd be nice.
I will see about that. And that was the cause. So what else? Let me see here. There's going to be cars, food, vendors, live bands, and iRadio USA DJs locally and from far away as California. I don't know who's local. I'd like to know who that is. They're going to be on hand to broadcast live and promote the event nationwide. So That's going on right now in Massapequa if you're in the area, Sunrise Highway. Right.
Very cool.
Stop into Harbor Freight Tools and buy some, you know, some Harbor Freight Tools.
516-572-7440 is the phone number to get a hold of us right here at Motormouth Radio. And, you know, I just wanted to also mention something. We touched on something briefly before the show on our usual, half an hour pre-show production chat. And I had a laugh because we talked about something called the Eureka moment.
Yeah.
I love the Eureka moments, and I love when it happens. And my father used to say this all the time. If you ever get stuck with a problem working on anything, he says, hey, I have to do this in my father's voice and his attitude. He would say,
right.
Hey, you ever get stuck with a problem? He says, you know what you do? He says, you go to the bathroom. He says, you take your brains into your hand. You go to the bathroom. You come back. You come back and the problem's solved. And I'd say, Pop, really? It doesn't work that way. You know what? He hasn't been wrong yet.
Okay.
Has not been wrong yet. Because I just back away from a problem. Well, sometimes I don't have to go to the bathroom. Right. Sometimes I do. But once I come back and put my hands on the side of the fender and look at that problem like I've been staring at for hours before, and I go, oh, there it is right there. It happens every time.
Right, right.
And the issue that we spoke about earlier was I couldn't figure out why every time I would blip the Chrysler, it had it running, had the carburetor set, and I would blip the throttle, and the idle would go up.
Yep.
And I'm like, what the dirty old why? If I had a rock, I couldn't figure it out. And then once I put my hands on the fender, after going to put my brains in my hands and come back and put my hands on the fender again and look into it, ow! I put the spring in backwards for the choke spring.
The choke spring, yes. The thermostatic spring, yeah.
I'm like, what the dirty old...
Just so people know, that spring is, it's actually a very... It's an interesting device. It's kind of more complex than you think.
It sure is.
It's a bimetallic spring, and what it does is it changes state with heat. So when the car is cold...
So do you.
I know, but that's another story. When the car is cold, that spring expands and puts pressure on the arm, if it's installed the right way, so that when you activate the throttle the first time, it moves a little foot on the linkage and lets that spring, boom, move another piece of linkage and close the choke. As the engine heats up, as that spring heats up, sometimes they're electric, sometimes it's manifold, sometimes it's exhaust gas, whatever heats it up, it will start to compress and wind itself tighter, which in turn starts opening the choke. So that's why you had the exact opposite effect.
Yes.
So,
and the spring is made up, I think, of two different strips of metal.
Hence the name bimetallic spring.
Bimetallic.
Right?
Oh.
Like bi, you know.
Look, between the both of us, we can make one complete brain.
There you go. Right.
We should do a radio show.
Maybe one day we will.
You know anybody?
I like coming to this place on Sunday. It's a very nice room. It's air conditioned. I always have fun here.
We should do a show where people actually listen.
Yeah, right. We should try that. Is right. Maybe we should sign in with iRadio USA. I don't know. I don't even know what LA are, but they probably have more listeners than we do. So, I don't know.
And on that note, you can call us 516-572-7440.
I had a few things this week, too. I had an issue, a couple quick problems. One I worked on yesterday on my Pontiac, which I'm driving today. I had replaced the rear tires a couple weeks ago. I think we talked about that.
Right.
And there are only two tires available, the M&H Racemasters, which I didn't want to use, or Nittos. And even though the tire size is exactly the same, the Nittos bulge just a little more on the top. And I noticed when I drove the car a couple times, I saw a little bit of a witness mark on the tire. Something's rubbing on the one tire, just on the left side.
Right.
Because the rear ends are offset in the A-bodies. So yesterday, I jacked the car up, took the wheel off, got up under the wheel well and saw a couple of little marks. And it looked like, it was the inner wheel well. There was like a reinforcement. I thought it was going to be the actual wheel opening where the trim is.
Right.
So what I did is I sent our good buddy Mike, I sent it. Because I have this thing when I don't know exactly how to attack a problem. Now, I would have attacked this with a hammer and a grinder, but the car is painted now.
Yes.
Even though I'm working on the inside and it's a double wall, I'm very cognizant of that. So
yes.
I sent Mike. I have this thing in my head. I go WWMD. And what that means is, what would Mike do? So
what would Mike do?
So I sent him a text. Even though he was in Florida, I said, hey, what the hell? You know, and he got back to me and said he would use a hammer to pick and maybe just lightly tap it. I'm like, okay, I was thinking about the grinder. I did. I hammered it a little. It was bouncing off. So I took the grinder to it.
You did.
And I clearanced a couple of spots that looked like they were the offensive pieces. And then.
So how are you grinding? Were you like getting in there and you'd grind and then you'd look back out at your finish on the outside, get back in there and grind again, look, turn around, come back out and look.
Well, I had the car up in the air and I had it on a jack stand. So the rear end was hanging, had the wheel off. I climbed into the wheel well. So I was looking at the inside of the wheel well.
Right.
And I was grinding like this with the sparks shooting at me. Yeah, it was not pretty. It was not fun. It was not, and it wasn't ideal. This would have been a better job, really, on the lift where I could have stood under it.
I'm wondering why you didn't do this job on the lift.
Because I was home. So what I'm going to do is I put it back together, and I painted it all again with black paint. So now if I can see, and now if any of the paint is removed, I made myself like a little footprint. And if I didn't get it, I mean, I took material off, so I made it better than it was. Whether it's
you took material off and you made it better?
Well, yeah. I took metal off. I ground off some metal that was in there. So I I removed stuff that was there. So
right.
I've made the problem better already. There's actually maybe a 2 millimeters more space than there was. Whatever it is, I don't know. But if it happens
again,
that may
be just enough.
It may be. And if not, I told Mike. I said, listen, I'll try it. And then I said, I may need your face in there, maybe your expertise. So then I'll bring it down to the shop. We'll put it on the lift. We'll see. So I'm driving it today, and I'll... Yeah, we'll take a look. So that was a quickie fix.
So this is basically your danger drive.
Yeah, like even before. It wasn't rubbing. Like when you're over bumps, you don't hear it go. You didn't hear. I mean, I've been in cars that tires would get hung up in the wheel wells now.
Oh, yeah.
I never heard a thing. It was very, very light. So if it's still doing it, it's even lighter than it was. So yeah, we'll see.
Uh-huh.
And that's what happens again when you use in different parts and whatnot. What I did do earlier in the day, though, is part of my I'm on this quest to clean up and get rid of a lot of junk before.
You too?
Yeah,
really?
Before I got to get rid of the real junk, because if I do end up, relocating, I need to have less junk. So
right.
I look out my bathroom window and I see my pool deck in the pool. And what do I see under the pool deck? But a whole bunch of tires that are still mounted on rims that used to be in the old shed that I moved out a couple of years ago when I built a new shed and didn't really have a place to put them. So I stuck them under the pool deck. And now I see the tires are getting like green mold on them. And I looked once or twice. I saw the rims are getting kind of rusty. Finally, I said, you know what? I got to start somewhere. I'm taking them. I loaded them in the FJ. I went to the shop yesterday morning. I said, I'm going to break the, because you can't get rid of mounted tires and rims unless you throw them out of your car on the Merritt Parkway. And last time I did that,
or unless they're in my Pathfinder and the tire just flies off on its own.
The troopers in Connecticut were less than happy with me when I did that. So I said, okay, let me not do that again. I'll dismount the tires from the rims, and I'll keep the rims that are good, and I'll, I posted this, and of course you can see it on our website. Not on our website, but on our website and on Twitter. You look up Motormouth Radio. It's on Instagram as well. There's a couple bonus picks on Instagram because they'll let you put up to 10. Twitter only lets you use 4. It's on our Facebook page, Motormouth Radio, but it's also on real_Motormouth Radio on Twitter, on Instagram. Sorry.
Oh, it came right up.
Yeah.
Looking right at it.
So let me tell you, the rusted rims, I had to actually jettison a couple of rims. A couple of Rally 2 rims went to the dump. They were so badly rusted. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, too bad.
No, yeah. Well, that's what are you going to do? But you know what? What else is going to do? Let's do this. We got a phone call. Let's go to the phones. Go to the phone and say hi. You're all the Motor Mouths.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Christian. What's happening?
What's up, brother?
What's up?
Oh,
you know
just
what I miss?
What?
You know what I miss?
No.
The old rim and the tire planter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People used to have those, and they would always be painted white.
What? Yeah.
Right.
Who's making them anymore?
I don't know.
Hey, you should have done it. I saw the post. I said, I thought about that, because when you pulled the old tires, old rims, I just had a 66 Impala. I had one wheel I had to pull off a rim, and I'm like, man, this would make a great planter, you know?
Yeah.
Who's doing that?
Yeah, you're right. No, not anymore. You're right. That's a thing of the past.
Christian, there were some neighborhoods that I was living around in Brooklyn where they would plant half the tire into the ground by the curb.
Yeah. Right, like loops. Yep. Yes.
Like loops. Yeah.
Like if you have a go-kart track, that all works well.
Right, and they get painted white also.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, or multicolors. It all depends on whatever nationality.
Well, I'll tell you.
I thought about it the other day. I'm like, wait, I really could use a planter.
Yeah.
Because, like, for what you would spend at Lowe's on a planter, I can make one with a rim.
Yeah. And I tell you what I had to do. There's a picture of the tire on the machine. It's a Pontiac Rally 2 rim, which, unfortunately, one of them went to the junkyard, the other one I brought home.
Yes.
And the Firestone 500 snow tires that I was dismounting.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I had those on my car in the 70s.
Yeah.
That's how long I've had. So I sent the picture to my friend Gerard in PA, who mounted those back. I said, look, I'm dismounting the tires you mounted 42 years ago. And there was a tube in there that I took out. And it said, if you expand the picture, you'll see it says not for use on radial tires. So it's like,
right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about old junk? We'll talk about old junk.
Wow.
What about the smell?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and these
you know, when you pull that valve stem out and it still has air from 40 years ago.
Yes, yes. It's like a dead man's breath. It's like...
Or in my case, I had to where you pull the valve stem out and water shoots out, just pouring out.
Yeah, one of these did have water in it, too. You're right, right.
Oh, yeah, man. You know.
So I tell you, I actually couldn't get that... one of those snow tires, the tire machine, which is new, it broke the bead, but then it pushed the bead into the rim, and it wouldn't break it. Let me tell you, I hate doing tires, first of all. It's not my line of work. These things, that one fought me like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, really. I go through it all the time, man, all the time with just old, crusty tires, and especially with the motorcycles when they don't. They're like, pull these things out of the woodworks, you know, like, oh, it's been sitting for 30 years and they want me to put new tires on, and especially with spokes because all the water gets in that way. But I mean, just the fact, what was I going to say, that the guys, Tony's tire, I think it was in one inch.
Okay.
Yeah, I used to drive a fence truck and I'd blow an inner tire or something like that. I would just roll up over there and the old guy would come out, eat, like the old time, would get the sledge. He had the split ring.
Oh, yeah.
On the dualies. So you had the split rings on those rims. Mm-hmm. And the guy would put that thing down on the floor and he starts smacking that ring off. That's not, you know, that's dangerous work, man. And I'm sure not too many people doing that anymore.
You know, it's funny because Jeep and Al just told me old split rims make great campfire rings. He said that just a minute before you said it.
Yeah. Back to my situation right now. I have a collection of them over in Farmingdale, my old shop that I still have. You know, I still use for storage. I got five dump truck wheels sitting over there, and I've been making fire rings.
Oh, there you go.
So usually when I see the guy from Barnwell, I'm like, "Hey, buddy, I'll throw you $10. Can you take these tires off of me?" You know,
right.
But the Home Depot sells a grill.
Uh-huh.
It's like a fire ring grill.
Oh, cool.
And it fits perfectly in those.
Nice.
I'll have to send you a picture. So I've been making the fire rings. I have one in my backyard.
Nice.
That's awesome. I'll
be cooking on that later.
So, I was actually making some progress. It was dirty work. I mean, I made a... I broke the first one, and this pile of rust just went poof on the floor.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. So now I got to clean up when I'm done. It was like, what a mess.
My tire machine is always dirty. I can never keep it clean, man.
I know.
It's crazy. And then, you know, I used to do, like, the ATV tires, or the guys that actually, like... You know, they knee deep in the woods and they use the tire slime and then you pull the tire. The fixer flat used to be the worst.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, been there, done it. But I miss the planters, man. Like, I don't see only upstate, maybe if I'm rolling through upstate somewhere, I'd be like, wow, look at the old planter.
Yeah.
And it's white. Like you said, it's painted white.
Right.
Yeah, they're all white.
And they would scallop it. They cut the tire like scallops on the top and fold it out and they were perfect.
Another piece of Americana that's gone. Yeah,
man. Got to bring that back.
Yeah, definitely.
Not that I'm going to be the guy selling those out in my front yard. You know?
Yeah, right.
Exactly. And fire rings, but you never know what Christian Price, you know.
And actually, I found on one of the rims, it was a Riviera wheel that I had. And it had a Vogue tire on it. And the thing I didn't know about Vogues, because I never mounted them, the whole inside of that tire is gold.
Yellow, gold, whatever.
But it didn't have the gold stripe on it. I know when my brother got his first 71, it had four Vogues on it. So that's what this was probably from, was that car. Then the second 71 was the one that I ended up with after he had passed. And I think I had that as a spare in there, but I didn't know that they had the gold inside. I tagged Vogue on the post. We'll see if they get back to me. Sometimes companies...
It's like some of the old motors, the Uniroyal tires. These have red tubes or like reddish color. You know, I've found all sorts of cool stuff.
Right.
You know, sometimes I've had tubes that were over 60 years old and they're still good.
I remember that the steel 721, seven wrapped around two, surrounding one. You know, it's like 721 revolutionary radial tire.
I remember the three
Planters, man.
Yeah, and I remember the three drivers. There was Uni, Roy, and Al.
Oh, Uni, Roy, and Al, right?
They all had the helmets with the tread that ran across the top of the helmet.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Have you used that equalizer beads yet? Because I just bought a couple bags of it for my F-150. I got to put some used tires back on some other... I'm just swapping some tires on this truck.
No, so I haven't used those, no.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Okay, yeah, please do.
Got them on eBay. They're like... I think it's just a bag of glass bead that blows apart in there, and it just kind of balances the wheel, internally balances out. Not that this truck is any bit as smooth at 70 anyway.
Yeah, gotcha.
Anyway.
All right, Christian.
Let you guys go.
All right, thanks, man. Okay.
Later.
No longer.
Thanks, my brother. See you soon.
All right. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour, Chris. Do we have an honor group of the hour?
Of course we do, right?
All right, we got
on this mediocre automotive talk show. Yes, we do have a Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. If you demand your vehicle to be loaded with options, but you don't use any of them. That's right. If you ordered heated seats, but you never use them because your buddies will make fun of you. If you wanted a rear defogger, but you never switch it on in the winter because you clean the rear glass before you get in the car, you're a responsible individual. If you demand cruise control, but you live in an urban area, or if you can't live without a CD player, but you can never remember to bring the CDs, or an MP3 player like we talk about with the millennials. But so if you demand all the creature comforts in your vehicle so that it will be easier to sell to the next guy because it's fully loaded, then you're part of the Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
Excellent.
There you go.
So let me ask you, how long has it been since any of those applied to you? How long has it been?
How long has it been for what?
Keywords. That any of those things have applied to you.
Oh, I don't use a rear defogger. Okay. I will never use a heated seat. Never.
Okay.
Yeah, heated seat will always make me want to pee.
Yeah.
So I don't use the heated seat. I will never use a CD player because I always forget to bring the CDs. And let's see what else. Yeah, no, I don't think I've ever used cruise control. I've actually switched it on by mistake.
Wow.
I went, let me switch that off.
Cool. All right. Well, now we know how long it's been. So let's take our bottom of the hour break, and we'll come back with more Motor Mouth Radio in a couple of minutes after we take care of some bills and stuff. And Ray Guarino for Chris Switzer, 90.3 WHPC. How long will this break be? I don't know. Let's find out.
Let's find out.
Show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CARSTAR Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
You're listening to the Motor Mouth.
Oh.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
What about?
You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
No, hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
What about?
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No, I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evan Root.
As always, you are consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming. I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Oh, this is why I call wrong number by accident.
I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
What about?
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Word of Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Motor Mouth.
Your car not running right? Let the Motor Mounts help you out at 516-572-7440.
So, Chris, what I need to know is,
yes,
how long? Did you get the hint? Come on.
Other than Ace and Paul Carrick up front,
you know,
from 1972.
Sometimes these things just get thrown in your lap and you just have to go with it, you know?
You're okay, right. Right. I am.
Actually, that was 1975.
75.
That's okay. That's what the CD box says. Maybe they're wrong. Right. They could be, but yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. But anyway, how long?
You're really pushing this.
This is the stupid stuff that you do anyway. So, yeah. So 516-572-7440. You can call us and talk about your own thing. There's another, you know, we talk about working on cars and sometimes you need, like you had mentioned before, specialty tools to do a job.
Sure.
I'm in a position now where I need a specialty tool that I don't have, and I'm not going to buy it, believe it or not.
What?
Yeah, because I'm once. You know, how long will I have to? Once. So I finally decided this year to charge the vintage AC system that I had installed in my Pontiac.
Right.
And,
oh, it wasn't charged?
No, it was never charged. I never.
Okay.
And the reason is I have everything installed. All the hardware's there. The compressor's in. It spins. It turns. Everything's there. All the,
right.
I did the whole installation except the final hookup and charging. Because I wanted to break the engine in. I didn't want to. I'm from the old school.
Right.
You know, now I'm thinking like there's 4-cylinder cars in the house running around with AC all the time. And I'm thinking like I don't want to load the engine. I got a big block. So I decided now's the time. But the thing is, I just have to make the pressure hose, you know, the big rubber pressure hose, they get crimped to the
yes.
to their ends. And it's a special type of crimp, and there's a special crimper, and I don't have one. So
I wouldn't think you would. That's a highly sophisticated piece of equipment there.
And I could, if you brought the hoses to a place like Moreland Hose or even up the corner to the auto parts store, they could certainly crimp it for you, crimp the ends on and give it back to you. But I couldn't do that originally because I didn't know where they had to be. And so I have these extra long lengths of hose now that they have to get cut and then they have to get crimped on the car is what it is. So I'm going to see if the guy from the auto parts store would be kind enough to come out the back door one night with the tool. Or I'll open the hood and he'll just make two crimps and I'll be done. So,
got it.
Because I don't, I don't have that tool and that's one I'm not going to buy. So
I'm just thinking that to actually take the whole affair off the car and have it done and then brought it back and have it reinstalled back onto the car.
No. And the reason is, well, one of them I could because it goes from the condenser to the compressor. So that one could be done because I can remove that. But the other one, the hose comes from inside from the evaporator. So it comes from inside the car, from the evaporator, outside through the firewall, and that's all installed up under the dash already. So
really? There's actually a rubber hose that runs from inside the dash out through the firewall?
Well, like,
that's
Yeah, think of all the you always saw them coming through. That, you know, it's the that's your
I would think it would be metal up until the point where it gets into the engine. Then they would put the couple of the union on there and then run the fitted hose.
They did it a different way in the past. Like the OEMs did it different ways. This is really thick wall, high pressure hose. So it's,
I'm sure.
You know, and I think they do it this way on an aftermarket setup. So you have the latitude of bending or bringing it to, you know, make it a custom installation where you, you know, you can run it. And I do what most guys do. It comes out of the firewall, actually where the old blower motor was. You know,
right?
I shot it straight between the fender and the inner fender well, like that dead space up in there. You can put your arm back in there if you had to.
Oh, I'm sure.
And that's where I ran them, so they pop out again in the front, like right behind the headlight. So,
oh, great!
So that gives me that nice, you know, they kind of hide behind the, you know, everybody. That's kind of a common thing now with this stuff. So, yeah. So it's nice that you can do that. So that one I can't remove because, you know, it's connected to the evaporator. So
got it. Yeah.
So it's just.
It's not like the ingenious Chrysler way of doing things where they mount the antenna right under the blower motor.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't find that out until you pull the wheel well off the car and go, wait a minute, who is the knuckle patch that did this?
Right.
So, no, I totally get it. Yeah. At least the General Motors engineers were a little bit more ingenious than the Chrysler guys.
Just to back up a step, we were talking before about the carburetor on the Holley 600.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I have a carburetor on my bench that came in from a friend last week. It's actually off my sister's car. He had bought this car from my sister years ago. I passed it up because it wasn't a GM. It's a Mercury.
Okay.
It's a 69 Mercury Montego. And I think it's a Montego XL, and it's this really nice blue teal kind of color, like an ice blue, white convertible top. It's got a white.
Oh, it's convertible.
Yeah, white
interior. Your sister had a convertible.
Yeah.
Nice.
In Colorado, of all places, right?
Wow.
White interior, bucket seats, floor shift, I think manual windows. And it's a 390 four-barrel automatic car.
Very cool.
So he brought me the Ford carburetor. It's a Ford 4300. I'd worked on the Ford 4100s, which is a different carburetor, even though it's 200 different. Now it's a lot different.
Okay.
And this one, the 4300, is giving me fits because of all the carburetors I've done in my life, and yes, I've done many. The float adjustment is driving me nuts. I'm finding conflicting information on how to adjust the float.
Really? This is odd to me. How come?
I know. And, well, the problem is in the real information, the stuff I found on motors manuals, and I'm sorry, it was even those discs that Joe had given us years ago, Mitchell manuals, and in the factory Ford information, they show like a bar with stands that you put over the you know, it's a tool to the height gauge. So, yeah, I don't have that. You know.
Now, when you talk about the height gauge, you're talking about you taking the body of the carburetor, the only half of it, right? Because you need the floats exposed.
It's the top plate, yeah.
So you have to measure the floats in one direction. When you're holding the top plate upside down, you measure the floats at their highest. That would be their highest level. And then you flip it, and then you measure it at their lowest level when the floats drop.
Yeah, that's called correct? Float drop. Well, yes, that's typically how it's done. But now, in all the information I saw in the rebuild kit and other literature, they show that. Like, hang the float, 13/16, and then there's another adjustment in the back. The problem is, they talk about this other little secondary valve, but that's why I had a lot of confusion with that. Now I look at the Ford stuff. They show you the top plate with the, and the float is a horseshoe style float. There's two float pontoons.
Got it.
They show it inverted on the bench with the floats down.
Down.
And then this tool goes across it. So they're not hanging the floats. And of course they use it. So now, like I said, it's conflicting information and I got to figure out what the heck I'm going to do. So, yeah, it's kind of every once in a while you run across something like this, and, you know,
Why do you think the information is conflicted? Because the carburetor's so old?
No, I don't think that. I mean, the information I'm seeing is old, too. It's old publications. I'm just seeing that they published two different ways of doing this.
Right.
You know, through the carburetor manufacturer stuff. Motor had one thing. The Ford stuff was something different. And I haven't come across that before, which is kind of odd. It's very, very interesting.
But are the numbers the same, or I can't even ask if the numbers the same, because basically one publication is measuring it in the upside down way, and the other publication is measuring it in the unexcited way.
Right. Yeah, if I had the measurement that Ford used, I could replicate it, and then I could know what to do. So, yeah, I've been fighting with that. Usually I turn these things around in just a few days, and I would have, but now it's been sitting on a bench. I have it there since last Sunday. So I kind of let it sit for a day or two. I mean, I cleaned it right away and took it apart and cleaned it immediately and started doing some of the rebuild the next day. But then I got involved with other projects during the week, like internet jacks and tires.
Television installation, TV installation, monitor installation.
All that cool stuff. Yeah, so, life happens.
And that is the joy of this program, and that's what I always appreciate, and I know you hear it from me a lot, because I'm the one that usually has more problems doing day-to-day mechanical stuff than you do.
Right.
But it's kind of funny when I hear you're jammed up.
Yeah, it happens.
And that's what shocks me.
Sure.
I wouldn't know what to do. I mean, other than the fact that you know me, whenever I come up with conflicting information, now it turns into a laboratory.
Yeah.
At this point, now it's like, okay, set it up one way, put it on the car, and see what it does. But you really don't have that luxury, because the car is nowhere near the carburetor, right? It was sent to you.
Yeah. Well, the beauty is, it's a friend of mine, and I said, I may just stop by his house when this gets put on, because I'm, the 64 Caddy we have at the shop, the same thing. I rebuilt the carburetor on that. And that has two sets of horseshoe floats in it.
Yes, it does.
And they're both,
I'm aware of that one.
And they're brass. And one of them had been changed, because you could see it was nice, clean, new brass. And the other one was, somebody had actually JB welded a couple spots on it.
Ooh.
And I weighed them, and the one with the JB weld was heavier than the other
one.
Sure
was.
And when I put that together as per spec, I had gas coming out of the top of the body of the carburetor with this little weep hole, and said, what the heck is going on here? And what I did is I took the top of the carburetor off on the car. I had posted this going back a month or so ago, and I just readjusted that front float. I just had to keep I kept lowering it. Putting the top back on until it stopped doing that. I had to compensate for the improper float.
I
think I'll do that with this. I'll want to get over to Dan's house and take a look and see, like, just in case on startup, if things start spewing gas, I'll know. All right, pull it apart and lower that float.
Yeah, I was thinking that the carburetor was the car and the carburetor were in separate parts of the world here. I wasn't thinking that the car was local.
No, he's a few towns away.
That sounds like a plan. I do remember that carburetor off the 64 was really fairly easy to. I'm trying to think if it was my 64 or my 63, because they both had two different styles of carburetors. Uh-huh. But I do remember swapping out an accelerator pump while the carburetor was on the car.
Okay, yeah, it wasn't bad to do. Right.
Pulling the top off. Literally, it didn't even have the top off the carburetor. The screws were still in it. I was able to lift it up and just pop the accelerator pump out and just drop a new one in, drop the whole thing right back down.
Right.
It took like one hand to hold the top of the carburetor, one hand to drop the new accelerator pump right in the gasoline, drop it all together and call it a day. And it worked.
Right.
I remember, I'm trying to think, it was the 64 to the 63, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
There's when I had real fingers.
Yeah, I know. No arthritis. I know it all too well, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I know it all too well.
And that's the funny thing, because you're better at this than I am. I can't remember. I definitely have CRS when it comes down to little bits of minutiae of information of vehicles that I've worked on. I'm starting to lose it.
Right.
Because, like, when I was back in high school or in my early 20s, I would have had the answer to that, no problem.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it was the 64 Caddy, it was that carburetor, but I'm like, was I in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
What car was I driving? Where was I? Who? So, it's turned into that. I've become a what would you say, slave to the computer. I'm a slave to Dr. Google.
Yeah, right, right.
Because it's like I have to go to look for any information, but to remember information of in my own life, it's like it's starting to get hazy here.
I'll tell you, speaking about carburetors, I had a really nice conversation with a fellow the other day from Georgia, a fellow named Hal, and he's a Ford flathead / Stromberg carburetor aficionado. I mean, this guy is a heavy-duty collector, and he also likes the early Mustangs. I was helping our friend Pete over at Rolling Thunder Cycles work on put together a tri-power setup for a Chevy engine he's building. Okay. And the problem is Speedway sells the parts, but the carburetors are Stromberg 97 knockoffs, and they're from China. And there's been a lot of contention. Some of them are okay. Some of them are really bad. So our buddy Hal said not to use them at all. He only recommends the original stuff, which he has. There's also Stromberg 81s available, which are smaller in CFM size. So he says some guys would run a 97 in the middle and 281s, smaller ones on the outside. So anyway.
Okay. That sounds good.
I had spoke with him. We had a long conversation, and well, you know the Georgia accent very well, right?
Because yes, yeah. I do.
It's very endearing. I tell you, it's really cool. So we're probably going to have Hal on the show in another couple of weeks. We'll get him on to talk about what he does. It's not his main job. This is his kind of. It was always his hobby and his, his fun stuff, which kind of morphed into. He became the guy, so it kind of morphed into a secondary business for him.
Really?
So yeah, and he does pretty well, but he has all original stuff. So he collects a whole bunch.
I love it.
Yeah.
See, I love hearing stuff like that because that intrigues me. I would definitely be the student in this conversation just to learn about those things because there is nothing more exotic than seeing a nice flathead sticking out of the hood with those three Strombergs that with the curved intakes.
Right.
That is so cool. And I love it, the fact that they are. Their old technology that works really, really well, looks really, really good, and they can't accept an air filter because air was a lot cleaner then, yeah. I guess.
It's kind of interesting. That's one carburetor I've never had to rebuild. And
that's now, how good they are.
I think anybody could do them because they were kind of easy. But I have done a Model A carburetor. I did one for Gary on his Model A.
Right.
And I tell you, as simple as that thing was, I think it was like a Linkert or something, as simple as it was hard because it wasn't the Quadrajet or the Holley, the one I was familiar with. So even though there weren't as many parts and it was just a little tougher for me to do because I'd never seen one before, you know?
Right.
So the Stromberg is the same thing. I've never had my hands on one, but I'm sure that, I can
do it. Now that I think about it, was that carburetor a downdraft or an updraft, the one off the Model A?
It sits on the side of the engine. I'm going to say it's a downdraft.
Downdraft, wouldn't it be?
Downdraft, yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't know.
It was in the top, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, just checking. That's why I was wondering. Maybe you rebuilt it upside down. No, I don't know.
Yeah. I just remember, what it is like with this Ford 4300, I haven't done one of them before either. And it's now just, you're into something, you know how to rebuild the carburetor genre, but this one, the specificities of it is what trips you up.
This is what makes you a professional, young man.
Yeah, that's you know, that's
going to add another feather to your fine floral cap.
Ford
which you
cap,
have there. Fine feathered, feathered Ford cap. Yes, as I spit all over my microphone.
Speaking of cool cars, our other friend, Dan, stopped by the house yesterday in his Volvo P1800, which is a...
He's the saint.
Yes, and that's his plate says, Old Saint.
Old Saint! Oh, you just gave it away.
And his key fob has the stick figure saint on it.
Oh, wow.
And he actually told me that that's the meaning of his last name in Italian.
Really?
Yeah, Old Saint. So, yeah.
Old Saint.
A little more.
And he kind of looks similar to the Saint, if last I saw.
Actually, you might not recognize him if you saw him. Dan changed his appearance. He lost a lot of weight.
Good for him.
Yeah, and took a lot of pressure off his knees, so he feels a lot better. But he looks good.
That's what I love about Dan. He's proactive.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Gets the job done.
Yes, sir.
So, like a man who gets the job done.
That's right.
Great. Very cool. So what do you have to say? I mean, he shows up with the car and just goes, hey, hi, hi.
Well, yeah, he was out driving around, I guess, and he calls me on the phone and says, hey, you home? I'm like, yeah. What are you doing? I said, well, I'm in the back. I was working on my car. Now I'm actually dosing the pool with some stuff. You know, so I'm, I said, he goes, oh, I'm on the block. I'm like, so come on in the back. You know where I am. And then, I hadn't seen that car in person. I actually rebuilt the carburetors for that. It has two Zeniths.
Zenith Strombergs.
Which is just like the SUs that you had on the Triumph. I rebuilt those years ago for him.
Yes, you did.
And then
you
took them away.
Mine for me, too. Yeah.
So this is the first time I got to see the car. I'd never seen it.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, it's funny because I had sold something. I sold an axle to a guy online, rear axle for the TR6, which is a compound sort of. It's got a universal in the center of the axle assembly, and it's got a universal at the tail end that meets up with the pumpkin. Yeah. So a gentleman needed it. He had a clunk somewhere. So I figured he was coming in from the center of the state, and I figured, maybe I'll give him a couple other parts that I have. I have, like, the trunk lid. He'll throw it in the back of his SUV.
Right.
When should I? Shows up in a TR6.
Yeah, the same one with the clunk?
Yes.
Maybe you want to change the part on your driveway.
He could have. I had the tools. But he showed up with a yellow one.
Wow.
And we were looking at the car, looking it over, and I'm like, boy, do I miss mine.
Really?
Wow. I really miss it. I even told him, I says, sure, I got a place, I got the axle in a box, and just put it on your seat. I said, but I was going to give you the trunk lid, too. He's like, nah, I don't need the trunk lid.
Yeah.
But even like, maybe if he had an SUV, I could have like snuck it in the back of his hatch without him seeing, but not, can't give it away with the TR6. He's got no place to put it.
No.
So I had a visitor. A
good.
Classic car visitor as well this week, which
very
was kind
good.
Of nice,
that
kind
cool.
of refreshing.
Yeah,
it was good to see. You know, it's nice because you talk to people that this guy was cut from the same cloth. Basically, I was. There was not one body panel on this vehicle that fit well.
Oh, good. Yeah,
and just on mine was the same way. And he was trying to fix things basically not on the cheap. But he knew he did not have a concourse vehicle, so he didn't want to go and spend a ton of cash if whatever was working was happened to be ugly. He still kept it on the car, and that's what I kind of appreciated about mine.
Function over form.
Yeah, it's true. And people keep asking him, when are you going to restore it? He's like, no, I'm leaving it alone.
Uh-huh.
He made it from the center of the state with the car, and I'm sure he made it back. I didn't get a phone call. But people used to ask me the same question. When are you going to restore it? And I'm like, no, I'm not restoring this car.
Right.
And that's what I told the guy who eventually bought mine. He said, what should I? He says, don't restore it. Leave it alone. Just use it as a driver, because that's, you're going to put money into it, and you're going to lose.
It's kind of funny. Now, with Dan out there with the P1800, I remember someone else stopped by a month or so ago with another car, and everybody just pulls up in front of the house and stops.
I wonder why.
And both times, it ends up my neighbors across the street. They're a younger couple with a couple of young kids, and they happen to be walking down the block both times. Every time something goes on, they walk down the block, and they're like, hey, nice, what's going on? Like, they're probably thinking, it's just that guy's got his old dopey friends again showing up with their stupid old cars.
Meanwhile, the young couple across the street from you are loaning their cars out to all their friends and all their family. Oh, I got a pickup truck. I'm going to give you my sedan, and you're going to go to Cape Cod with it. Yeah, that's what has to happen across the street from me. So I totally understand.
So I tell you what, we're going to be getting ready to get out of here very shortly because our time is up. And... like I said, we got nothing. We have nothing planned right off the bat for next week.
So listen to us.
But I'm going to be talking to Hal again. We may get Hal in to talk about the Strombergs and all the flathead Ford stuff, which is cool.
And, I'm looking forward to that.
And I was thinking about getting Pete in on this too, because he's, it could be a roundtable conversation. I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm. And then, but anyway,
you know, that's always a welcome. A welcome thing here on this program is to just bring in people that don't know each other and have them just swap ideas. It's always cool.
So keep it where you got it. Listen to Kim and Thunder Road. And Chris, what do we always tell people before we leave?
Don't follow us home and don't lend out your car.
Right. So Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, Motormouth Radio, we're out of here till next week. 90.3 WHBC. See ya.
See ya. We'll be right back.